Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio Show. My guest for this morning is Ariane Devon Voisin. She is an author, speaker, change expert, and an entrepreneur. Ariane is the founder, CEO, and chief change optimist of First 30 Days, a New York City-based media company focused on guiding people through all types of changes. She also hosts a popular online show, Change Nation, where she interviews experts and thought leaders on all aspects of life changes. Ariane is also the co-founder of Mindful 365, a website and iPhone app that helps people live consciously a day at a time. Ariane considers herself a global soul. Having lived all over the world, she has a degree in economics and international relations from the London School of Economics and an MBA from Stanford University. Ariane and I will be having a conversation about her remarkable life's journey and her passion about helping raise happy, conscious, healthy, and empowered kids through a special three-book series on spiritual life lessons for kids. Giggles and Joy, You Are Loved and Being You. Good morning, Ariane. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing good this morning?
Great, Johnny. Really great to be on your show. Thank you for inviting me.
Fantastic. It is a pleasure to have you on the air with me this morning. I am excited to learn more about you and your passion in educating kids with special spiritual life lessons. Let us start by getting to know you a little bit better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
That's a big, beautiful question. So I have an interesting accent. I was born in the United States. I have French parents, and I grew up in New York City, Paris, London, Brussels, Hong Kong, and Shanghai. So the one thing my parents got me used to very early on was change, which you'll see sort of has a guiding thread through my life. But it showed me sort of, you know, the power of different cultures, different belief structures, being around different people. My parents were very focused on education, very focused on raising me, I would say, above the neck, where the mind was really what was valued. So it was all about performance and achievement and education in all aspects. I did very well at school because I wanted my parents' approval. I thought that was going to give me my happy and forever after and what was most important. I went to the London School of Economics for university, graduated there when I was 19 years old. And then I went into management consulting, figured that was the way to have a good, safe life and a good, safe job and be paid. And for the next 10 years, I sort of followed more of an external journey. I went to business school. I did 10 years in the corporate world here in New York City. And I started, you know, climbing up a pretty big ladder, having very big jobs and, you know, significant positions. My last one, I was the managing director of a $500 million fund here in New York City at the age of 29. And what started to happen was I realized that, you know, I was getting all these things life had told me to go after, but I wasn't getting any happier. I wasn't getting any more fulfilled. And I was wondering, you know, what's really missing? And eventually, you know, I really started tuning into more of my inner world and my intuition that was telling me, you know, you're in the wrong job. You're you know, you're with the wrong guy. You know, you've got to lose the weight, because I was a little bit overweight at the time as well. And what happened was I started kind of wanting more fulfillment, more meaning, more contribution, as opposed to just self-concern, which is, you know, my relationship and my money and my job and my title. And that felt very empty to me. And so I went traveling and I started getting back to things I loved. I loved writing. I loved reading. I loved people. And to make a very long story short, in the next few years, I've written a few books that started off really with books for grown-ups on various life skills. So the first one I looked at was change. And is there a way to make change easier? Because change is the number one guarantee in life, and yet we all hate it. And, you know, I was pretty good at change. I broke off an engagement. I left a big job. I was leaving a city. And I thought, you know, everyone goes through change, and yet we all avoid it. and are there principles that people who are good at change follow? So that was my first book. My first book was The First 30 Days. And that mm-hmm. led me into starting a company. It led me into coaching people through various life changes. And, you know, over time, I wrote a book on health. I wrote a book on pursuing your dreams. But what I started to see was all the work I was doing with companies, with grown-ups, that all the wounds and all the suffering, a lot of it traces back to when we were kids. Things mm-hmm. that happen at home, perceptions, beliefs, things we learned, things that happened at school. And I wanted to really start being a bit more of a voice for the younger generation, the kids, because I feel like we need to also focus and encompass and educate children below the neck. And that means
right.
focusing on their heart and their spirit and their emotional life and their passion and their humanity. You know, this is a little human, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just about educating kids to fit in perfectly into what seems to be a world that's already very out of balance. And so these children's books I put out a few months ago are called Giggles and Joy, You Are Loved and Being You. And each of them has 8 life skills for children, which I'm sure we're going to talk about a bit later.
I have to tell you, the book, it's so attractive, beautifully done.
Thank you.
Beautifully illustrated. It's very, very engaging. I don't remember having any books when I was growing up, but I can tell you one thing, the principles that you are wanting to teach, it's basically the heart and soul of the foundation that I grew up with, because my parents were really, really focused on that. And what I like about it, of course, you have this 3-book series in terms of a nice, what I call a layup, one after the other, and sort of a nice, wonderful, after all, life is a journey.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you for saying that. You know, the themes I wanted to look at, I have a now 5-year-old boy, and it's been an amazing journey to sort of watch, you know, what's not only going on with him, but sort of the children of his age and what they need, what they're getting at school, but especially what they're not getting. And, you know, I wanted to focus on things not only like kindness, but like self-kindness. You know, we always tell our children to be kind to others and say sorry to others. But what about kindness towards themselves? Because what's going on in their own minds and the conclusions they're making about themselves and boys, girls, money, work, moms, dads, you know, that is shaping them. There's a famous neuroscientist called Bruce Lipton who says that, you know, that the patterns and beliefs that are imprinted in a child by the age of 6 become the dominant programs that shape the character of an individual's life. And when I remember reading that, I thought, wow, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, you've damaged your child if you're listening to this and they're after 6, but it does mean that those early years are very, very important in terms of what they're picking up, the stories we're telling them. So this was my small contribution in some ways to the journey of, you know, parenting and grandparenting and teachers who are all trying to do their best.
So true. What I enjoy about it is that I think I'm sure you enjoyed this as well. You became a parent, well, in 2012 or 13 or so?
2013, yes.
Yes. And so even though you may have all this concept with you, it's like, and then when you became a parent, I'm sure it came into complete focus, which is a little bit different because now all of a sudden you are truly the teacher, the coach, the counselor. You're going to go through this process as a mother.
Yes, and you know, I thought I'd have a perfectly spiritual child who was like a Buddha baby, and you know, was completely perfect because that's what we assume for our children. And you know, I've been on my own spiritual journey for 20 years now, and yet you know what the children that come to you are perfect for you, which means that they too are here to be your teacher and your coach and to show you where you need to still heal. And so the journey in some ways has been one where whatever's showing up, you know, in our household, my first go-to question is not what's going on with my son. It's always what's going on with me, right? Which is the ultimate parenting question, which is what's here for me? Why am I triggered? Why am I upset? Why am I angry? Why am I raising my voice? Why am I making this a big deal? Why, you know, and when you put the focus a little bit more on you, it's never really the child's fault or responsibility. There's something that you need to either look at within yourself or something that happened in your childhood or So to me, that's sort of, if I'm in a spiritual conscious aware place and I'm not being reactive,
right,
which of course still happens, that's mm-hmm. where I go to and I go, oh, this reminds me of this, or this happened when I was five, or,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
I feel out of control and then my way of disciplining feels very controlled. So, you know, I say that because I think we always think that the parenting role is one that's superior and has more answers.
Ooh, right.
There are plenty of times I've been humbled and had my child go, Mommy, are we ready to forgive and let it go? And I'm thinking, oh, my God. You know, like that's when we see that, you know, these kids have more wisdom than sometimes we give them credit.
So true. Well, there are a couple of things comes into play there for sure. Number one is I love the concept of you mentioned why. That's so important. As a child, if we look back in life, what motivates us, what taught us things is because of our curiosity of wanting to know things. Now, there are times when we do that, we buck the heck of our parents, like our child does that to us right now, I guess. The flip side of it is because it is during those wonderful moments of why that they learn.
Of course.
It's during those wonderful moments of why is we love.
Mm-hmm.
We truly love.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I've been aware of is to always sort of, you know, tell the truth, which is, it's
right.
very powerful for a child to know that saying, I don't know, is a sign of strength, or I need help.
That's right.
And so they mm-hmm. need to see that from their parents. So if my son asks me something and I don't know the answer, I say, actually, I don't know the answer. I'm still learning. Let's find out together. As opposed to, mm-hmm. so he sees, you know, there's a lot of talk in the parenting community about a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. And the growth
yeah.
mindset is really about children knowing that for the rest of their lives, their brain is growing and learning and making mistakes and solving problems. But the way they get that is that their parents are also still very much on that journey. And so I'm a big believer in radical honesty and authenticity with your child from same
right.
I don't know to, you know, if I come home and I've had a bad day, I'm not going to pretend to power through and put a huge smile on my face and try and, you know, muscle
right.
through until my son goes to sleep, which is what most of us do, because he will feel tension from me. He will feel stress. He will feel disconnection. He will feel I'm not present. And yet he's
right.
left wondering, where the hell's my mom? Like, what have I done? Right? Because the child always takes it on themselves and thinks it's their fault. It's like default nature.
Right.
So I'll walk in and say, my love, I've had a really tough day. The subway was this. Some people really upset me. I got frustrated. I didn't get my work done. So I do it in a language that he can understand so that he – and I say, I need grown-up time. I'm going to take a rest. You know, I'm
mm-hmm.
going to make some food. But I can't play with you right now. So you
right.
see, there's an honesty there where he also now knows that having a bad day is normal and not being happy and perfect all the time is normal, because we have these standards on our children where we expect
mm-hmm.
them not to be grumpy, you know, to be happy, to have a good day
mm-hmm.
at school. And that's not human. You know, these books are a lot about just teaching kids, but also parents, that humanity skills and giving permission to be human to a child is such a gift. They don't need to perform to you. They don't need to be happy all the time. When you're allowed to have a bad day, they're allowed to have a bad day. And then they see you recover
mm-hmm.
and they see
right,
you get through
right.
it.
When you talk about age, all your books, the ones that you've written right here, are designed up to age 10 years old. And
mm-hmm.
the concept, if you think about it, as we go through lives, because we were there once before. Now,
yes.
we can't fault our parents because they love us the best they know how.
Mm-hmm.
People get crazy with me sometimes when I tell them that people don't do things wrong. Of course, within certain contexts now, okay? Your parents really love you the best way they know how. And so it's our job generationally is to sort of get better at it. And so
yeah.
in this case, this generation, learning from that, you sort of expound it, make it better and so forth. But the overall concept is still the same. That's the age where you talk about, actually, all the way to maybe about 16, 17, and even 18, you are still a teacher, whether you like it or not. You got to ask yourself, what are you teaching?
Of course. You know, and I've got lots of things to say there, which is, So many of us, you know, we either liked the way we were parents or we hated the way we were parents. Like, it's quite extreme, right? It's like either your parents were responsible for everything or your parents were lovely and you had a super happy childhood. And, you know, my invitation for people is to look at, you know, both extremes, which is the, the hate how you were parented. A lot of the times what we do then is we take, we do the complete opposite and we try and reparent ourselves through our own child, right? So we try and heal our own childhood by doing, being, and, you know, creating an environment that we think is going to be great for our child, but it's really about being great for us. And every child requires sort of different things. So I ask people, I go, are you reparenting your child? Are you underparenting your child, where you're delegating it to the school systems? Because you don't know how to discipline and you hope that they're going to figure out your child and get them, you know, on the straight and narrow.
Right.
Or,
right.
you know, the doing everything the way your parents wanted, you know, is also to be put in question. Because when you were parented 20, 30, 40 years ago, that is for a world that is not this current world, you know.
That's correct.
We're different on the career track. We're different on the college track. We're different on the social, political, emotional track. So, so all of them need to be sort of looked at and to sort of go, you know, it's not an either or. It's always sort of an and. What can I take that was great, that feels great? And, you know, the age groups from for the books, it's interesting. I've had people read these books to even much younger kids than two because they love the illustrations. And, you know, my belief is that children are learning and imprinting from you all the time. So if you are speaking to your child before the age of two, you can certainly read these books to them before the age of two because they're sponges. They're picking things up about everything, about courage, about beauty, about taking a deep breath, about, you know, all those things are things going to be imprinted. And what I love about the sort of 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old age group is they often want to read them to the younger kids or the younger siblings because they are then put in a role model, you know, I've learned this, I know how to teach this. They're sort of, they are you know, allowing kids to teach kids is a very powerful concept.
You're a better student in this case when you're a teacher.
Yes.
So that concept really works. But what we have gone through ourselves, being adults now, and when you look at it yourself, you're a mom right now. All those years that you were corporate executives and the passion that you have, and when you look back at the way your parents brought you up, if you think about it, Ariane, all decisions were made based on two equal but separate forces, love or fear. And they were trying to protect you. They were trying to get you to go as far as you can go, and they go the way they know how to motivate you out of fear so that they don't want you to be successful.
Of course.
There's no parents out there. You are a globetrotter. You have been everywhere. You met people in Africa and in the Himalayas and so forth. As a mom, I think you can agree to this. It doesn't matter where they live. They only have one goal in mind. I want my kids to be successful.
That's true. And what's amazing, what's amazing is what you say is, you know, you take the words out of my mouth. I'd say they are there is love-based parenting and fear-based parenting.
That's
what
correct.
What I find so interesting about what you just said, Johnny, is they want their kids to be successful. And so success is in first place. And yet all I've spoken to parents all around the world, like you've just mentioned, and what they all say is they want their children to be happy.
Right.
And if I have permission, I often say to them, I say, you know, it appears like you want your kids to be successful more than happy. And those two things are very different values. And they're not against each other. They're not mutually exclusive. But when you bring up your child to be successful, that will create a different life pattern than bringing up your child to be happy.
Right. What happens here, though, they are pursuing success. Or happiness is a subset of something, you see, because when you look at it, what are the true human desires? I'm sure you can see this. When you talk to all these parents, what do they desire most for themselves and their kids? Happiness, blessings, and abundance. Now, to them, what makes you happy? Oh, my son is da-da-da-da-da, or my daughter is da-da-da-da.
A lawyer, a doctor, an accountant.
There you go. There you go. You know why? Because they felt like that are the chosen field that will give the son a lot of money and help them secure their future because that's the only thing they know. Yeah. So it's not necessarily wrong, But that's what they were brought up to believe, you see.
So
it's very, very different.
It is, you know, and to me, if I was coaching someone or helping someone through that, I would really look at the beliefs around safety and what creates safety for a child or an adult. Because, I mean, I do this in my work. I coach executives who still, they have the money, they have the job, they have whatever, and there is no feeling of happiness or success or safety. So clearly, those things are not really the ultimate things. There's something greater. And, you know, this is where, for me, if the spirit is unseen, unknown, misunderstood, broken, not valued, this this sort of core emptiness, whether it's teenagers feeling it or successful adults, that the spirit is what's missing, which is why that's the conversation that we need to have. It's not about lessening the education or changing what people go do and work and study. It's just reinforcing another part of them that, for now, I don't feel has had the focus.
That's correct. That's definitely true. By the way, you're listening to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. Our podcasts are available on Apple's iTunes, Stitcher's Radio, Blueberry Podcasting, and TuneIn Radio. I'm Johnny Tan, your host, and my guest for this morning is Ariane Debon-Boyson. She is an author, speaker, change expert, and an entrepreneur. Ariane is the founder, CEO, and chief change optimist of First 30 Days, a New York City-based media company focused on guiding people through all types of changes in life. She's also the co-founder of Mindful 365, a website and iPhone apps that helps people live consciously a day at a time. Ariane and I are having a conversation about her remarkable life's journey and her passion about teaching kids spiritual life's lessons through a special free book series. Ariane, do you feel the energy of the world has shifted spiritually?
I mean, I say yes and no. For me, it hasn't shifted enough. And it's also shifted away from being spiritual.
Yeah.
Like I feel, you know, for me, spirituality is about being connected to something greater than yourself. It's going beyond self-focus. And that can be connection to animals, connection to Mother Earth, connection to, you know, other people, connection to God, connection to life, the universe. But it's knowing that there's something bigger and greater going on. And children need that sort of impact. You know, there's a study that was done for 25 years on the impact of spirituality on kids by the woman is called Lisa Miller. She wrote a book called The Spiritual Child. And for 25 years, she tracked children who had some form of spiritual influence. And this didn't mean church or religion. It included that. But it was pretty much any gratitude, compassion, empathy, you know, self-love, like some of the more spiritual values. And then children who had none. And the impact was extraordinary in terms of lower depression, lower bullying, happiness, you know, pursued what they wanted to do, health in the body, you know, no teenage drugs, suicide, depression. Like it was extraordinary. And no one's talking about this. So I do think it has, you know, I feel whether it's grown-ups or children, I think we're in a spiritual crisis. I think that people need to come back into their bodies. And they need to be, you know, in relation and community with something more than just their job or their money or how that defines themselves.
Very interesting. I thought the millennials are much more spiritual than any other generations.
Well, they are in the sense that they don't want what it is their parents have projected onto them. Right. So it appears like they are anti-corporate and they're anti, you know, money and anti a lot of the things. And, you know, I've looked at this in detail. And one of the reasons is their parents themselves are not happy. Right.
So right.
It's very
right.
hard to buy into a life philosophy when what your parents are pushing on you made them get divorced or run out of money or be complaining or feel unsafe. So, of course, the millennials are going to go, sorry, mom and dad, but your plan didn't work. I'm going to go do something really different. And, you know, you want to raise happy kids? The most important thing is for you to be happy. It is not to teach them something, give them music or Chinese lessons. All that stuff is great. But when your child looks at you and does not get happy mom or happy dad, it doesn't even mean together. That's when they start embodying the same level. You know, if you have anxiety, your child will pick that up within the age, you know, age of two or three. That's
right.
Why for me, the healing needs to happen also at the parents' level, not only sort of instilling these in the child.
Sure. I agree with that. When it comes back down to, and I hate to say it very crudely, I mean, even in the corporate world, you can't have a B telling another B how to be an A.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. And I say that respectfully. But at the same time, no parent out there, you hear me saying this over and over again, it doesn't matter. You don't have to have a PhD, a double PhD. It doesn't matter to me whether you have a GED. Still have life wisdom to teach your kids. There are other things you can outsource, but there are other things that you don't outsource because you know yourself. You are the living epiphany of that life's wisdom that you can share. That is actually far more powerful because that's what values are and ethics are and so forth.
Of course. And that's what's going to help your child through the tough stuff. You know,
that's
I had a brilliant education, thank you to my parents, Stanford MBAs, like, you know, incredible education. It did not help me with losing a loved one. It did not help me with breakups. It did not help me with health issues. It did not help me with, you know, breaking off an engagement or finding myself in a career that I really didn't. It didn't help me with any of that, right? Mm-hmm. So my education was sorely missing. That stuff came from my parents, my grandparents, my peer group, life, books I read, workshops I took. So I say to parents, like, you know, let's focus on what's beautiful and good and true and innate wisdom, like your intuition. You know, if you have a beautiful heart, you created or adopted this child, and that child is sort of looking to you to embody values. You know, that's what I'm very passionate about.
I agree. Coming back to Giggles and Joy, the spiritual life lessons for kids. What I love about the very first book is that you've talked about this a little bit earlier about kindness. And I think one of the most important thing in that book to me is the concept of starting with the idea of prayer. I like that very much. Kids don't know that, but I remember as a kid, my mom would be toting me over here, over there, everywhere, and teaching me, just say something good, ask something good, and you'll be protected. That was funny. I remember that as a kid. It's like, what?
Yeah. You see the impact of it, you know, and the prayer poem is really, it's not a specific religion. It's sort of honoring all religions. What's true and universal about all of them? This is what, you know, a Nelson Mandela or a Mother Teresa or a Gandhi would, you know, want your child to sort of know. They would not try and have them associate to a person or a personality. But the books fit beautifully next to really any faith and any religion. And for me, prayer is just, it's giving the child sort of an inner rich world where, you know, whether they're praying to their higher self, it doesn't really matter whether they're praying to something that they believe in or that their parents would like them to believe in. It's, and you know, a lot of this prayer is about praying for yourself or someone else. And that, you know, prayer doesn't mean you get exactly what you want, right? So it's not a sort of, oh, this is a version of a, you know, Father Christmas, I get to pray and get what I want. And then,
that's right.
You know, it's sort of, it's allowing a conversation for a child that they wouldn't know is possible. Like we do prayers at night, and I always ask my son, I said, who should we say a special prayer for? And it can be someone affected by the floods in North Carolina. It can be a homeless person. It can be a pet shelter. It can be my mother-in-law right now who's got a health issue. But you see, it allows them to have a wider world that's not about him, right? And it puts it, that's how you teach empathy and compassion, which is like you are part of this global world and you can focus some energy in your heart and imagine the other person in front of you and send love and energy from your heart to their heart. Like this has been taught in meditation in grown-ups, like the power of like thought and prayer and impact. You know, I'm not calling it meditation for 4 or 5 years, but that's actually what you're teaching them.
Right. So true. Not only that, though, you are teaching the kids to look through the lens of love. Because praying, yes, you do pray something for yourself, but a lot of times, like you mentioned just now, let's pray for somebody else. Or who would you like to pray for?
Mm-hmm.
That changes the dynamic.
It's such a lovely thing, Johnny, because you know, we all want to get to know our children better, you know, and asking them, what did you do at school? It doesn't always get anything from your child, but we want to know their inner world. And what I found is lovely about these life skills is when you read a life skill called prayer, or you read a life skill called sad and mad, which is another one that's in the first book, your child will then be triggered to tell you what makes them sad or what makes them mad. And it's a conversation you might never have had. And the same thing for prayer is like, oh, you know, I saw this or I heard this. And, you know, like that's when you see what your child is actually thinking deep down. And that's the world that you want to have an influence on. It's not only homework and spelling tests and getting them to soccer practice. It's like, what are they feeling and thinking inside? And sometimes, you know, you're like, I have no idea what's going on with my child. Like, these books help. It's sort of what creates the blocks within your child? What are they, what conclusions are they making? You know, there's one of the books has a poem about you are safe, and about teaching children about the real safety, which is inside. You know, some people think they live in a safe world, and some people think they live in an unsafe world, but it's the same world.
Right. What I like about the second book is the fact that life is beautiful. To me, I take that as the spectrum of the different things that's going on around us. Diversity, different things actually enrich life, enrich us as a person. There's a sense of appreciation of the difference. And when you look through the lens of love, then you appreciate the beauty in all the differences in what life has to offer you.
Yeah. And Jody, one of the things, you know, a kindergarten teacher told me to do this with children, and, you know, is to teach them that they get what they focus on. So if they focus on, you know, this is going to be boring, that's going to happen. If they focus on, I'm going to like this, they're going to like it. But I mean, as grown-ups, you know, we really get what we focus on. And a simple exercise we've been doing, which is amazing, we live in New York City. I would not, you know, focus on love in New York City. It just, and that's not what New York City breeds, right?
Right.
And so these
right.
children don't have a lot of signs of love in New York City. And so what she does is she tells her kids to look for hearts or the word love anywhere they can find it. And so every day, I can show you my phone, my son walks around the neighborhood, subways, on his way to school, on to the shops, to wherever we're going, in the park, and he looks for hearts. And he sees anywhere from 3 to 10 hearts every single day. And I'm not saying this because my son's special. I'm saying this because he's looking for them. And I have to take a photo of every single heart that he sees. But because of that, his perception of New York is full of hearts. It's full of love.
People
have hearts on their T-shirt, on their jackets, on their bags. There's love written on the walls, on the pavements. And so, you know, the children are growing up not thinking of New York as noisy and dirty and smelly and with horrible people. They grow up thinking, there are hearts in New York City. Let's go find them. But do you see the long-term impact on a child is tremendous? So my child looks for old people, which is an interesting thing. He likes looking for them, seeing them, saying hi to them if they're in a walker or a wheelchair or they're sitting on a bench sat by themselves. He is focusing on that so that he can find them and try and smile at them and make them have a happier day. So we can help our child focus on things. We can help our child see things that even I've lived in New York City for more than a decade. I have not walked around New York looking for hearts, but guess what's happened to me? I see hearts everywhere. And I'm a lot happier when I walk out into the streets of New York because now I'm looking for them too.
Right. Well, it's sort of programming you gently to look for what's good.
Yes.
What triggers the things about hope and on the plus side of the equation for a change. That's what it's all about. Now, I mean, we're not living in a superficial world here where the negative side doesn't exist. But what happens here is to be balanced, realizing that you're going to have both sides. But when this critical moment comes into your life, which side of the equation are you going to be?
I say this all the time, is you cannot protect your children from the bad stuff, the bad times. You know, this is about raising kids to be fully functional in the world. And if the world is what it is, and if the world has technology and screens, and the world has, you know, tough stuff going on, it's allowing them to be fully in that world and giving them a tool belt. And you are responsible for their tool belt. And if their tool belt includes things like focus or, you know, helping them through change, we teach children in all the schools that I work in and I teach, we teach them about them having a change muscle. So that when they go to a new school or they start a new program or they get a new sibling or they lose a grandparent, they have a change muscle. And you can imagine these kids love the change muscle concept that you know, is getting stronger. So, you know, another tool to put in their tool belt is breathing. I'm a big belief in teaching children the power of their breath, because when the breath is calm, the mind is calm.
Right.
So when your child, whether in school or in the playground or having a tantrum, it's usually because their mind is not calm. Their emotions are over-frazzled. They are overstimulated. There's too much going on. But the power of the breath, you know, we know this as adults. The breath is the first tool you go to create some form of peace in the body. It's the reason people smoke. They smoke because they need to breathe.
That's right.
If you look at people lighting up, what's the first thing they do? They take breath. The truth is they could take deep breaths without the cigarette, but most stressed out adults do not take the deep breaths. And the same thing with children. You know, we taught our child very early on that breath feeds his brain, and that's basically what your brain needs: water, your brain needs sleep, your brain needs, you know, oxygen. And so I've seen him, like, he will start taking deep breaths. So that's another tool to put in the tool belt for hard times.
Definitely. What I like also, you mentioned in the second book, You Are Love, this is very, very important. Yes, you can. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So the yes, you can is, you know, children so often by the age of like 2, 3, 4, the only word they hear is no. No, you can't do that. No, don't climb. No, you're going to fall. No, be careful. And then, you know, we call the terrible 2s and 3s the years of no, where your child goes, no, I don't want. But the reason is they've been hearing no from you, right?
Right.
So they're in some ways they're matching and mirroring. But, you know, yes, I can is, it's really a celebration of remembering that children need to hear the word yes. Yes, you can do this. Yes, you can, you know, draw on, you know, this big white piece of paper as opposed to the wall. Yes, you can, you know, go to the park, where the child is also allowed to choose and decide. Like, one of the most amazing things to do with your child is to say, okay, I'm going to pick you up from school and you can choose anything you want to do. I mean, their eyes light up, because usually you're in charge, it's your plan, it's your program, you're going to tell them what to do. And so it allows them to make choices and decisions. Yes, I can. It's also about just making sure that their dreams and their imagination are still on. You know, because if they are in a school environment, it is structured. They don't have freedom. They don't have choice. They're constantly being told what to do. And so for your child to grow up having their imagination on, having their spirit on, believing that they can build a robot or they can, you know, use whatever is available in your apartment to build something, you know, It keeps that part of their spirit alive.
I agree with that. There's no doubt about it. I remember growing up, and like you say, the intentions are good from the parent side of the equation. No, you can't do that. No, you can't do this. When it's all said and done, that is because they love you through the lens of fear.
Of course.
It's actually out of love they say no.
No is a great word. No is a great word, and it's appropriate. And you should be saying yes at least as often as no. So you need to find words. So you can say, instead of saying, no, you can't have, you know, a cookie before supper because you've just made some, you say, yes, you can have a cookie, and first you need to have supper. Do you see where there is no? Or no, we can't go to the park. You can say, yes, we can go to the park after we've been to the shops. Or tomorrow we can go to the park. Where, you can turn it into an affirmative statement so that the child hears that what they want is also valued, right?
Right.
Because that's where the child starts having tantrums, which is everything I want, I can't get.
Right, right. It's true, though. What you just mentioned just now is very interesting because in the end, that sort of the secondary breath that the child takes is basically no, but why? Or yes, but why? So what happens is that parents have to pay attention on, like, it's okay to say no, but you need to explain why, because don't forget, the child is still very much in the learning years. They need to learn. They have no idea why you say yes or no. It's not about an attitude, because there's always a reason for something. And so let their curiosity win you over, for lack of a better term.
And I think there's, you know, a beautiful way for parents to sort of language things to kids. So, you know, sugar is a big problem. You know, there's a lot of sugar. Kids, that's usually what they want to eat. Well, instead of saying, no, you can't have an ice cream. No, you can't have pancakes. No, you can't have another treat. You know, you teach the child that they have superheroes inside of them. And those superheroes are fighting off germs, fighting off bugs, viruses, bacteria. Mm-hmm. And the superheroes, if you feed them sugar, your superheroes will die. I promise you, your child is not going to want to have all his or her superheroes die. And it's just, it's a way for them, or they're going to get sick, or they're going to act slowly, or, you know, the sugar is going to start fighting the superheroes. You know, you will find children self-restrained by themselves, and they'll say, I'll only have one gummy bear. You will see it, but not by explaining to them that sugar is bad for you, because they don't know why sugar is bad for them.
That's correct. That's correct. So true. You're listening to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. Our podcasts are available on Apple's iTunes, Stitcher's Radio, Blueberry Podcasting, and TuneIn Radio. My guest is Irianne Devon Poisson. She is an author, speaker, change expert, and an entrepreneur. Irianne is the founder, CEO, and chief change optimist of First 30 Days, a New York City-based media company focused on guiding people through all types of life changes. She is also the co-founder of Mindful 365, a website and iPhone app that helps people live consciously a day at a time. Irianne and I are having a conversation about her remarkable life's journey and her passion about teaching kids spiritual lessons through a special three-book series. I'm your host, Johnny Tan. Irianne, let's go back to something interesting. Were you on a spiritual quest when you journeyed on a motorcycle through the highest roads in the Himalayas?
I definitely was. I would say my spiritual path started when I was a teenager, because I was pretty unhappy. You know, my parents were not particularly in a good marriage, and I just felt like there must be something else. So I started journaling. I started picking up some books to try and, like, get happy and to try and realize, like, what's the point? What's the meaning of life? Why are we here? What am I doing? Why am I studying so hard? So it started at 16. I did the spiritual journey in the Himalayas at around the age of 34. So it's, you know, half my life. And to me, what it was is I was invited by a group that was going to travel with a teacher through the Himalayas for about a month on motorcycles. And we were going to face our fears and pull us out of our environment, you know, that is so familiar and so comfortable. And in some ways, it keeps your identity in place. You stay the way you are because of your peer group, because of your job, because of your tribe, because of your family. And this is a way of removing myself from that environment so that I could question my identity and find out, like, who am I? What am I? What am I here to be doing? How do I serve my fellow beings? How do I make a difference here? How do I, you know, let go of suffering, let go of fear? So the answer is very much yes. And it was an extraordinary, beautiful journey at the, you know, very top of the planet.
Very, very interesting. How has the elevation of your personal consciousness contribute to your success?
You know, success to me is, it's an inner job. It's nothing on the outside that's telling me I'm successful. You know, I've had all the sort of external accolades and never felt successful. I've had press releases in the Wall Street Journal that made me feel very depressed because they weren't the right press release. You know, when you suddenly realize that what the world is acknowledging you for is not really what your heart and soul came here to do, it feels very empty. So the answer is, once I've took some time away from all the projections onto me that the world was telling me I should do, or my parents or whatever, the more I've sort of been in charge of my own choices, meaning I've elevated my consciousness to consciously choose who do I want to spend my life with, you know, even my life partner, my husband, who, you know, where do I want to be, what sort of work do I want to put out in the world, my ability to rest into my inner space of, you know, I'm leading a successful life is much higher as opposed to the world telling me, you know, you are successful, you have this many Instagram followers, you know, that stuff is very, very irrelevant for me.
Okay. How about this? Do you feel that your entire life's journey up to this point, or maybe to that point where you sort of went through this metamorphosis of self-enlightenment, when you look back to all the way to graduating at a very young age, I'm talking about college, that is, and of all things that you studied, economics and international relations, that's kind of a little bit off in a tangent, so to speak.
Yeah.
But do you realize that these are the things that you have to collect as part of your chips? And then who you are right now, nothing is wasted, if that makes sense.
Yes, I love that. And, you know, for me, I think that the ability for me to have any impact is also because I have been in the corporate world, and I have been in the wrong relationships, and I have been overweight, and I have had to study and try and please my parents and still disappoint them. You know, like in some ways it's built up my humanity much more than, you know, I'm this perfect person that had a great life. And so I feel like everything I've gone through, you know, when I speak to corporates or I do speeches, like I have the ability to go, oh my God, I feel like I'm looking at myself, a younger version of myself. But I feel like because I've been there, I can help guide and be a little bit of someone that lights the way of the journey if people want to take it. I'm not saying everyone should or needs to take it.
I agree with that. What's powerful is the fact that you and I are experiential speakers. There are times that we don't realize why we went through. I'm just like, why me? But then when we look back, it is not about me. It's about how we can serve others based on our experience.
Yeah. And how we use it, and maybe something you went through is going to help thousands of people. You know, I think the thing is to have the courage to see that your experiences are worthwhile, and they're not only personal, but they are universal, and they're certainly not permanent. And I think the sooner you turn them into also a gift for other people, the more in some ways you're used as a facilitator, as an instrument to help others. And that brings ultimate joy and success.
That's correct, because that's that intrinsic value. In the end, it's all about the inside. True success is the feeling that you experience on the inside, and it's very difficult to sort of share it to others. But guess what? It generates the smile on your face, twinkle in your eye. How's that?
Nice.
Coming back to the book, the books are fantastic. Do you have recommendations for parents and caregivers on the best way to get the education information to the kids? And the reason why I say this is because not all parents have the time, per se. Like we talk about, in the end, some of us do have plenty of time, some of us don't, some of us are always running out of time. So what is the best way to get the education information to the kids?
Well, honestly, I think each book has 8 life skills. It will probably take you between 3 and 5 minutes to read one of them. And every poem is pretty dense. So I would definitely not read the whole book. I would pick one. So right now I've opened it, and the poem I'm looking at is called Change. And this is about helping a child deal with any form of change they might be going through. And you read it, it'll take 5 minutes, and that'll be enough. You know, and if you want to read one, or you want the whole week to be about change, and that is what's talked about in the house, that is the filter. Everyone talks about what changes they went through today or what they're feeling. This is not sort of the whole book. You know, I don't have time. I would hope that parents find 5 or 10 minutes when they're putting their child to bed, or, you know, before supper, to just even read one of these skills. You will see your child will gravitate towards some of the ones they like. Like there's one called Being Sick. And it's all about aliens being sick and aliens throwing up, and they've got spots all over their face. And the children love this one because it's funny. There's some that you'll read in, you know, a minute or two. But that to me is read one of them, have a conversation, and potentially have it be the theme for the week. You know, there's only 24 of these for now. So you'll have an adventure, even as a family.
So true. What I like about it, too, it's so attractive. I would leave it out, whether it's at the dinner table, breakfast table, and so forth, and let the kids' curiosity lead you to what they want to know. The only thing you have to say, hey, go through this. Let me know which one you want to talk about or have any questions.
Yeah. And you'll be amazed, Johnny. You know, what's amazing is the one your child picks, you know, whether
it's
they can read
same.
Or not read. First of all, it's not the same, but often it's the one they most need or the one they're most sort of having something come up with for them. So
that's
pay
correct.
Attention to that too. Yeah.
I agree with you because what we think they need is not the same as what they think they need.
Yes. True.
Are you planning to add more titles to the series?
You know, I've got one absolutely that has come from parents and teachers that want some more skills. So there's one on materialism, and, you know, a lot of parents want their kids to move away from materialism. Another one is about self-forgiveness and about helping children forgive themselves for what they might have done. Like, we're very focused on go say sorry. But what about saying sorry to yourself? You know, like you feel bad. They feel shame. They feel guilty. Generosity skills is another one. You know, a lot of those are hinted at in the poems. But for now, I've got three. We released them a few months ago. I want to sort of bring these to as many people, teachers, schools, parents, grandparents as possible before we release the next one. But yeah, they're coming. There's more there.
Wonderful. Please take some time to talk about your team.
So my team, we're an all-women's team in three different countries, cities. Carly is a good friend of mine. She really helped take the content and make it rhyme a little better. I wouldn't say I'm the rhymer. Some of them rhyme, some of them don't. She's based in Cape Town, South Africa. And Ellie, who came up with a lot of these extraordinary illustrations, she's in Seattle. And she loves using art to heal and to really create a rich emotional life for children. They're amazing. You can never do anything by yourself.
So true. Where can someone go to buy your books, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
So the books are, of course, on Amazon. They're available either individually if you just want to try one or as a gift set. Right now they're on sale. So Amazon would be my go-to place. More information about the books or the titles or what's, you know, the endorsements. We've had some extraordinary people give us, you know, I was going to say endorsement. That is gigglesandjoy.com. And then my work, so my coaching, workshops, we're doing a course for parents on life skills. I have a TED Talk coming out on life skills. The best place is Ariane Studio. That's ArianeStudio.com. And, of course, I'm on social media, but not that much. But I am there present.
Wonderful. Wonderful. What is next for you?
You know, I'm finishing off this online course for parents, teachers, caregivers, where, you know, not everyone has the time to go to a workshop. So I want to provide it in a way that people can do it at the time they want and to look at these seven life skills that I feel we really need to teach. So how do you teach intuition to a child? How do you teach breathing to a child? How do you teach telling the truth or forgiveness to a child? So that will be on my website in the next few months. So that's very much present. I'm also working with schools to develop the curricula around more of these sort of softer, emotional, happiness-type life skills that they don't need to be a separate curriculum, but the more schools and the more educational environments take these on, the more amazing it'll be for our children.
Fantastic. You have accomplished so much as an individual, as a woman, and of course now as a mom. Looking back in your life, what recipes for living life can you share with us this morning?
You know, the first one is that you need to be patient, and that the things that I thought would happen at 30 didn't, and the things I thought would happen at 40 didn't. And so to really give up give up some of the narrative and the timeline. You know, I did not get married at 30. I did not have three children by the age of 25, or like things that I thought were necessary for my life to go a certain way. So I would say dropping the narrative and the projections of what you think is going to make you happy, and especially by when. You know, my greatest years could be in my 50s. Who knows, right? I might not be here in my 50s. Who knows? So that would be top of list. And I'd say that the second thing is, the more I was in flow with using my gifts and my talents, which we all have, for other people, as opposed to just myself and filling my plate up, the happier I became. So serving your fellow human beings in a small way, in a big way, in a charitable way, and with whatever it is that you can. That to me was the big turning point from when I was 32 and unhappy and sort of, you know, this next new chapter of my life. And to, you know, for me, the spiritual journey has added so much dimension, because I've been able to rest in the parts that I don't control and that don't feel like they are, you know, they are really up to me, that there's something bigger going on. And I can't define it. I don't label it. I don't give it a particular name, but I rest into knowing that I am held and I'm safe and I live in a friendly universe.
Fantastic. That's really, really, really wonderful. Ariane, thank you for the great recipes for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, please join me next Tuesday morning, October 16. My guest will be award-winning author Tisa Tui. She is a longtime journalist who has happily turned her life experiences and reporting skills to fiction featuring female reporters. Tisa worked for 5 daily newspapers and the Associated Press. Her first woman stint included assistant city editor at the Detroit News and the copy desk at the Newark Star-Ledger. Tisa and I will be having a conversation about her remarkable life's journey and her latest novel, Flying Jenny. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchenTalkRadio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Ariane, it has been a true pleasure. Thank you again and have a blessed day.
Thank you. Blessings on you too, and thanks for the work you do.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
On your next Target run, join Target Red and earn 1% today, then treat yourself later. It's free and isn't another card. Just sign up in store with your phone number or at target.com/red. Some restrictions apply. 1% is not earned on purchases made with a red card.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.